This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday. Here's what we got on tap for this hour. We're going to get through what's on your mind. There's a lot of concern about the illegals and the guns and the Iraq-Afghanistan stuff. I am going to address this poll where we continue to shift the Overton window left, remote work, so much more we're going to get to this hour on the Jesse Kelly Show. Before I get back to these calls and some other things, I want to address what that lady was just talking about, hey, we fought the American Revolution over taxes and stuff like that, and we're there right now. I want to explain something else about the American Revolution people forget about. There's another part of it that's not really taught in schools, because it doesn't matter. It's not really taught in schools, but nevertheless, it's historical. Have you ever heard of the Seven Years' War? The French and Indian War? You heard of the French and Indian War? Well, if you haven't, it's not really a complicated affair, although I guess all wars are complicated affairs. What you need to generally know about it for our purposes was this is prior to the American Revolution. Obviously, the Brits had a heavy foothold here in America. The French also had a foothold here in America. And when I say America, I'm also including Canada in that. So let's just call it North America. The Brits wanted the place. The French wanted the place. I mean, shoot, the Spanish still wanted to start some of the place. There's a lot of fighting over this choice piece of ground over here. Well, eventually, what kicked off was the French and Indian War, which is kind of a weird way to put it because it was the French and the Indians fighting together against the Brits. That is, again, an oversimplification. There were plenty of Indian tribes that fought with the Brits, but in general, that's kind of what it looked like. The French allied with the Indians, and they fought the Seven Years' War against the Brits. Now, at the end of that Seven Years' War, as you can imagine, maybe you've guessed this, it was a long affair. That's a long war. It was a long, drawn-out affair. At the end of it, yes, the Brits were victorious. However, they were also dead broke. Wars drain the treasury. Wars are terrible for the bottom line. That's a big, big, big reason why we're $34 trillion in debt, I might point out. Wars are majorly expensive. So the treasury was drained. The British Empire was looking around, didn't have what it used to have. And so the British Empire started to do something. It started to take the troops they had on the frontier. Now, remember, the frontier back in those days was not Montana and then Utah, all right, here in America. The frontier back then was Kentucky. It was just those kind of places. It took the far west, most wild parts of the American colonies at that point in time. It took British troops being there, having a presence there in forts and otherwise, to keep the people and the Indians from fighting each other. Without the British troops there protecting the people, the Indians, who didn't want to be conquered, would regularly attack. They would attack and kill and steal and rape and pillage and do all the other stuff that you know about. So the American people, the colonists, I should say, they weren't American people yet, the British colonists there, they're looking around and they're saying, hey, my aunt's place, they just got raided. Everyone's dead now. All their stuff's taken. Hey, British government, you're my government. Where are you? Why are you not here? Why are you not here protecting us? And so I'm not going to set aside the Sugar Act and the Stamp Act and those taxes that really helped spark the Revolutionary War. But what I just described is one of the main causes of the Revolutionary War. And here's how that may tie into today. And no, it's not time for a revolution. That's not what I'm saying. But there is a contract, if you will, that exists between governments and their people. All governments and their people. And there is one thing that I can think of that is on every one of those contracts. Virtually everyone I can think of has this in it. Whatever else is in the contract, it has this in it. We, the government, we will protect you, the people. And the people, in turn, they sign the contract as well. We, the people, will remain under you, government, if you provide said protection. When the government ceases to provide said protection from the barbarians anymore, people, not just the American people, throughout the history of the world have come to an agreement eventually that the compact, the contract has been broken and it's time to go other ways. The government must protect its people. When the government stops doing that, in fact, when the government starts being the ones who harm them, you're in a bad spot. Really bad spot. Lewis, Colorado. Go, boss.
Yeah, Jesse Kelly, thanks for taking my call. 21 years ago, I guess we were in Baghdad, and you were there, I was there, just reflecting on everything that happened, how the war turned out, and how did it end it. A little bit about me, I was born and raised in Iraq, so I was a local over there. And when you said you guys are walking through the villages, and a woman turns Saddam Hussein's picture, I remember we have that picture at home, and we turned it down the same day.
No way! No way! Okay, so you were born and raised in Iraq, and that picture, okay, so you tore it down the same day I was discussing.
Yes, I was actually in Baghdad all March and April. And so everything happened. And in the beginning, we were very scared and we don't know what to expect and the bombardment. Once we understand what's going on, people were like, oh, yeah, they're not just going to drop bombs randomly. We see where the bombs getting dropped. So it was an experience. Funny thing, I came to U.S. and joined the Army. Came 11 Bravo.
No way. You were in 11 Bravo. Dang. Are you still in or are you out?
No, I got out in 2017.
So you, I'm just so floored by this. You, Lewis in Colorado, if you were in Baghdad in April of 2003, I was there. We shared a city in April of 2003. My unit was by the Martyr Monument. I think it's called the Martyr Monument, the one with the big teardrop in it. Do I have that right, Lewis? Is that the Martyr Monument?
Yes, I was about approximately a mile from there. My aunt's house was there. A mile.
How about that?
Oh, yeah. It was a mile. If you remember, just you passed that Martyr Monument, there was a huge apartment complex in that area.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember. So I was there.
I don't remember your apartment complex. I remember the one right next door to it. We burnt that one to the ground, actually. So apparently that one was not yours. But I do remember there was a bunch of apartments there. Man, what a small world. Lewis, just tell me real quick before I let you go. Did your family make it out? Are they here? Are they safe? Stateside? They good?
Yes. Yes, I brought everybody. I don't have any family members left in Iraq.
How about that, my man? Good for you. Good for you. You doing well now? Yeah. You on your feet?
Yes, I'm doing well. I got out. I did some contracting. I'm living the free life. I appreciate it.
Go get him, my man. Semper Fi. He was a grunt. In case you're 11 Bravo, he was a grunt. He was in the infantry. Man alive, what a small world. He was a mile away from where my unit was in Baghdad. And I remember the Martyr Monument because it had this, you probably look it up to this day, although it's probably blown up by now. Who knows? ISIS probably got it. But it was this big teardrop, just looked like a big water drop in some crappy little park. I don't remember it being wonderful, but I remember they did have water. There was some kind of pond in it. And in this pond, we were not allowed to bathe. We hadn't bathed in 3 weeks. And we were looking at this big body of water. And all we wanted to do was grab a bar of soap and go clean ourselves. And then these Green Berets got attached to our unit briefly. And the Green Berets didn't have the same rules. They weren't under the same chain of command. And we woke up one day and they're in the pond bathing. And we thought, this is a bunch of crap. All right, we'll get back to more of these. Man, I'm blown away. What a blast in the past. You know what else blows me away? Saving babies' lives. We all have regrets in life. I have more than you do, trust me. I have more than most. And it makes me feel good to do good from time to time, especially mixed in with all the other things I've done. Preborn, when you give $28 to preborn, it's honestly, it's unlike any other experience I can describe. You know that your $28 is probably going to save a human being's life. That from the day you send that $28 in, 10 years from now, there's probably going to be a 10-year-old walking the planet because of you and your generosity. 20 years from now, there's an adult walking the planet because of you and your generosity. Preborn is giving free ultrasounds to women who are about to have abortions. When a woman hears her heartbeat, hears the heartbeat of her baby, she chooses life almost every time. That's what you do. Do some good. $28. It's all tax deductible. Give them $28,000 if you got it. Preborn.com/Jesse. Save a life tonight. You never know what that life may turn out to be. Preborn.com/Jesse. Sponsored by Preborn.
You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show. You're welcome.
It is The Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday. Chris, I don't know how many times I have to request a different Metallica song. How many times do I have to request? There are so many good Metallica songs. What about, what, Chris, what? Did I never play Doom? What's Doom? The computer game? No, I never played Doom, the computer game. Is it fun? What? It sounds dark. Well, look, what does that have to do with Metallica, Chris? Why can't you play like No Memory Remains or Unforgiven or Unforgiven 2? There's nothing else? There's nothing else at all? Anyway, we're going to set aside Jewish producer Chris for a moment, and we're going to talk about this poll, and then I'll get to your calls here in a second. 877-377-4373. But a couple quick items. Katie Porker, you know, she's losing her Senate run in California. She's going to lose a primary to Adam Schiff, and then she resigned from Congress, so now she's a commie-free agent. She's out there wishing death on Trump.
Every decision has to be made in tension with Trump. Mm. Soon, Trump will lose or go to prison or, I don't know, have a heart attack. I'm not sure.
We call it the hamburger.
I don't know what his demise is going to be, but he'll have his demise. And the question will still be there.
She's lovely. That Katie Porker is lovely. And you know who else is doing a media tour today? Christine Blasey Ford. Remember that name? I'd forgotten about that piece of trash. Remember the woman who just invented rape accusations out of thin air? I mean, didn't come up with a single human being who could corroborate anything. No evidence she ever met Brett Kavanaugh. And yet, almost derailed Brett Kavanaugh's nomination based on lies and how evil the system is. Well, she also wrote a book. So today you woke up, there were puff pieces on her in the Atlantic, and she's all over The View. And man alive, you want to talk about your liberal Aunt Peggy living in a world of make-believe.
Well, you've been called a highly credible witness, and you have a PhD in psychology, you're a professor, you teach at Palo Alto and Stanford universities. But even today, some people remain skeptical of your story. And you write that during the hearing, Senator Lindsey Graham wouldn't even make eye contact with you. Were you
even today? I love how delusional these women are. Even today, some people question the story as if it's all been verified, of course, because in her mind it has. It's all been verified. Well, even today, there are people who question it. No. Let me be perfectly clear about something. I don't question anything. I'm calling you a dirty, filthy liar. You're a dirty, filthy liar, and I don't even like Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh is soft as a marshmallow to me. I don't even care for Brett Kavanaugh, and I still know you're a dirty, filthy liar, woman. I know you are for a fact. And that brings me to one more thing here. In fact, we'll get back to the calls here in a moment. Let's talk about this Overton window. Let's talk about the cultural shift to the left. Let me ask you something. The year is 1990. Not exactly ancient history, all right? And 1990 is the year. The year is 1990. And I want you to grab 20 women under 25. And don't actually grab them. Please keep your hands off. But you put out a call for volunteers, and you have 20 women who are the age of 25 or under, and they walk into this room, and you're going to do a focus group with the women. And you have these 20 dimes sitting in front of you, and you ask them a very simple question. Hey, dimes, can a dude of any age turn into a woman if he chops his penis off? The year is 1990. Okay, 1990. I didn't ask party affiliation at all. It's just the year 1990. How many of the 20 women who sit in that room in the year 1990 would say that a man can turn into a woman if he chops his penis off? How many? None. Not one. Zero. Zip. Zilch. This is not a thing that existed at all outside of about 15 minutes ago. Would not have happened. Zero. And I saw this poll today from the Washington Times. It's actually from the Claire Booth Luce Center. But the article's in the Washington Times. And it's being sold as some great thing for us. And maybe I'm just a cynic by nature, but I read it and I thought, wow, that's freaking sad. And that sucks. And here's the poll. Roughly 70% of women, regardless of party affiliation. Well, here's the headline. At least 7 in 10 women, young women, regardless of their political stances, agree that children should wait until adulthood to undergo gender transition. Hold on. What? What? I'm sorry? They should wait until adulthood? And I'm supposed to treat this as a cultural win? Well, yeah, I mean, kids can't, but obviously adults can. And that's a win? That we have now so poisoned the minds of people in our society that they believe anyone of any age can just start cutting off their body parts and change gender? That's a win? That's not a win. We have moved in the wrong direction, and we've moved there rapidly. All right, I'll get to more of these calls in a second. 877-377-4373. Now, let's talk about something. Let's talk about Joe McCarthy. Jesse, can you speak to Joe McCarthy and all his communist chasing back in the day, which we were told to believe is a big hoax? Okay, I'm not gonna go into a long thing on this because I have other things I want to talk about, but just remember this. Joe McCarthy launched a bunch of investigations because he told the American people that communists had infiltrated Hollywood and the education system and the American media, and they were intent on pushing communism onto the American public. And to this day, your history teacher tells you that Joe McCarthy was some witch-hunting loser who didn't have any idea what he was talking about. And Joe McCarthy was right about everything. Everything, because they were. The Soviets did infiltrate Hollywood. We have their communist card numbers now. I have them written in the book, Anti-Communist Manifesto, available at jessekellybook.com. What, Chris? We know they infiltrated it. And once again, one of history's heroes is treated as the villain. Funny how often that happens. Anyway, we'll get back to some calls and why remote work was always a mistake. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, reminding you, you can email the show, Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. Love, hate, death threats. Chris, what was that song? Who sung that? What is that? It's the French Fries Against Savior? What? That sounds like a newer band. That's not one I'm immediately familiar with at all. You're being so obsequious, Chris. You don't even realize it. One more thing before. You know what? No, I'm not going to make you wait any longer. Let's do these a little bit more. John, Tennessee, go.
Jesse, about 3 years ago, I escaped to Tennessee from the horrific state of Maryland. I still have friends and family that live up there. Last month, I heard about a case at the hospital near where I used to live. A girl came into the hospital emergency room. She had taken the pill for abortion. She was 24 weeks pregnant. She proceeded to deliver a healthy baby girl in the emergency room, and the little and this girl was allowed to say, "No, I do not want any care for my baby." And the doctors and the nurses were not allowed to give the baby any care, and the baby died 40 minutes later. A healthy, living baby was born and was allowed to die. What has happened to our society where doctors allow the innocent to struggle to live and to die like that? The quote-unquote, the ethics, medical ethics staff at the head of the hospital said, "Oh, no, you can't do anything for this baby. That mother has the right to allow her baby to die." I'm devastated. I'm glad I'm not living there anymore. I can't get my mind around it.
Man, I'm just sickened. I'm sickened. I just want to remind you that evil is real. And it can be hard for some people to admit that or wrap their minds around that. We want to think about things like, you know, good and bad. But as I've tried to explain many times again, we're not dealing with bad. If we were dealing with bad, well, you can work with bad. You can come to an agreement with bad, can salvage bad. You know, the analogy I've used many times is a bank robber, right? That's bad. It's bad to rob a bank. Don't do that. It's not a good thing. It's bad. But a bank robber may very well, and it has happened before, maybe from prison, maybe not, wake up one day and decide, "Man, I've been bad for too long. I'm done with this. I can't do this anymore. I want to be good. I don't want to be bad anymore." That may very well happen to a bank robber. Demons don't ever wake up and say, "Oh, man, this has gone too far. I don't know, devil. I think today we should sit this one out. It just went too far yesterday." The culture, many parts of our culture, not all of it at all, but our culture in many ways has turned flat out evil. I don't care who you are, doctor, nurse, no matter who you are, a 24-week-old baby, those babies live now in the NICU. That's a regular thing. If you're a medical professional or a human being and you can stand back and watch it die, my word, but let's set them aside. The mother? How does a mother watch her baby die? I'll tell you a conversation I had with Abby Johnson. You ever talked to Abby or heard from Abby Johnson? You ever seen any interviews with her? In case you don't know who Abby Johnson is, she used to work for Planned Parenthood. And she was a hardcore abortion-loving person. And now she's one of the pro-life advocates in the country. And I was interviewing her for TV one day. Remember, I do a TV show after I do radio every night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. I do a lot more interviews on TV. But I was interviewing Abby Johnson, and gosh, she just gutted me one night because she works with, you know, trying to save lives. And that includes helplines with girls who are pregnant, maybe want an abortion, not sure if they want abortion, things like that. And I was talking to her one night, and I asked her, What is the main reason? Surely all these girls are just scared or confused or lost or something like that. And I remember the look on her face. She got so sad. And I'm watching, because I'm watching the monitor. I can see her as she sees me. I'm watching the monitor and I'm thinking, uh-oh. And that's when she drops this bomb on me. She says, "Honestly, Jesse, the reasons they give us the most..." I forget her exact language, but she said it would disappoint you. And I said, "What?" And she said, "Honestly, most of these girls, they call in and they say, 'Hey, I don't want this baby. I want to go get drunk on spring break. Hey, I don't want this baby. I'm worried about losing my body, my body going back.'" You know, pregnancy can be hard on a woman's body and stretch marks and stuff like that. And there's nothing to be ashamed of there. It's something to be proud of. But that's why young women are killing their babies in this country. And remember this, whatever you feel about abortion, I don't expect you to be as pro-life as I am. This is such an, it's such a hot button issue with women that they will watch Democrats carpet bomb this nation in every possible way, and they will still crawl across a mile of broken glass naked to vote Democrat just so they get to still kill their babies if they want to get drunk on spring break. Now you understand once again why I say we don't have a politician problem. We don't have a Joe Biden problem, a Pelosi problem, a Mitch McConnell problem, a Mitt Romney problem. We have a people problem. Our people are really, really broken, and this country needs a lot of prayer. This country needs a lot. Tony, Tennessee, go, boss.
Hey, brother, fellow devil dog here. I was in Iraq when you were there. Same thing. I did 20-plus years, and it's like a broken record in my mind. What did I do with my 20 years for the country that no longer exists? Going back to the McCarthy thing, I believe we were infiltrated. He was persecuted and basically politically crucified. But the commies ran into the media, i.e. Hollywood. They ran into the newspapers and especially the schools, which they set up eventually, gave birth to the hippie movement. If you think about it, we were one nation under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all, right up until the hippie generation. Then all hell broke loose. Let's kill all our babies. And the same people screaming, let's kill all our babies, are saying, well, we're short on people. We need these illegal aliens over here so they can do their jobs. What about the hundreds of thousands of American babies we've killed that would have grown up and filled those positions? You never think of that.
Keep your chin up, my brother, and semper fi. It's a very good point. Semper fi. Tom, Spokane, go, boss.
Jesse, in the early 2000s, I turned with the invasion of Iraq. I turned against the Republicans with a passion. But then about 10 years ago, I turned against the Democrats with an equal passion.
Yeah.
Because of the wokeism and all that, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. I make my own yard signs, and they're socially, politically oriented. One I have out there right now, it says, when it comes to women's rights versus so-called trans rights, the Democrat Party abandons women. And another one I thought was pretty good, wokeism is the worst collective brain fart since Nazism. And, this Trump derangement syndrome has driven the Democrat Party insane. They haven't been able to gather their thoughts well enough to think about the crazy things
are. Yeah. Do you remember when I told you not to work remotely if you had the option? Remember when I told you that? Headline: Dell tells remote workers they won't be eligible for promotion. I told you, your boss needs to see you in the office. I know that's not popular. I know you want to work in your jammies. I get it. So do I. Show up to work, all right? Get up, eat your breakfast, take your chalk, put your khakis on, and go to work. Except unless you're a woman, you don't wear khakis. That's kind of weird. You look like a lesbian. Put on like a one of the suits or something like that, and then go to work after you take your female vitality stack. Male vitality stacks for the gentlemen, and then go to work. I guarantee they're listening to the show right now in Chalk's factory, creating natural herbal supplements for us. And you know what? They're not working remotely. They all showed up today. Chalk.com. Promo code Jesse gets you what? It gets you huge discounts on subscriptions on all the herbal supplements they have. Remember, we have got to start leaving our medical institutions behind whenever we can, and we have got to start focusing on natural solutions. T levels are down. Fine, not the end of the world. Get on a male vitality stack. Ladies, you're running out of gas. 2 cups of coffee needed at 2 p.m. every afternoon. Fine, get on a female vitality stack. But get on some Chalk natural herbal supplements. CHOQ.com, promo code Jesse. We have one final segment left. Hang on.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Final segment of the Jesse Kelly Show. I just can't get that call out of my mind about that. They just watched her die. Chris was looking it up. Babies born at 24 weeks have a 68% chance of survival. They just watched it die. Hey, we have someone online right here. Amy in Washington used to work in the NICU. Amy, go.
Hi. So, yeah, I worked in the NICU. I was actually a part of the NOS program, which is a app, you know, like the narcotics babies. 20 weeks they would make it. And my job was to hold, snuggle, stimulate, whatever you needed to do for these babies. But the point I wanted to make was I could be a little bit bonkers with this, but I could say, honestly, there's probably 25 ways to not get pregnant, and there's about 2 ways that I know of to get pregnant. One is consensual, one is non-consensual. So the fact that these women, and I'm a mother, and I love my children, but the fact that these women who are for abortion act like they're so dumbfounded how they got pregnant, and there's all these different ways to prevent pregnancy, and they act like the only choice they have is to kill their baby, is astounding to me, when all they could do is, you know, go get birth control, the 25 different ways to prevent a pregnancy. So I just look at it like they're just too stupid to not get pregnant. I don't know.
Yeah, Amy, you bring up a very good point. And having been in the NICU, especially in that kind of a NICU where you're dealing with the drug babies and stuff like that, it's, can't imagine the things you've seen. But I don't understand it either. David, Colorado, go.
Hey, Jesse, you were speaking about the British, and I was reminded of some of the atrocities they committed in the American Revolution. And the woman was also speaking about the American Revolution. Things were extremely bleak back then. In fact, Washington and his men in the battle for New York, they had asked the Continental Congress, hey, can we burn New York City? Because if these Brits get in here, that's it. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, said no. But amazingly, during their retreat, a fire started and 600 structures burnt. But there's a book called Washington's Immortals I read, and it was about a regiment of Maryland troops that they repeatedly charged the British and the Hessians and allowed Washington and his men to escape to the East River, where later that night they crossed the East River and got out of New York, lived to fight another day. But, you know, the thing about some of that is some of the things that the British did when the prison ships, if you ask for a doctor, they might say, throw you overboard or give you a bullet instead. There was a house full of people during the summer. The house was so prisoners. The house was so hot they'd keep their face trying to get fresh air and freezing cold in the winter. Something like 30 to 40,000 Americans died at the hands of the Brits.
Yeah, a lot of people do not realize it. And I actually have read that book, Washington's Immortals. That's a great book. It's a great book. Gosh, I feel like it was years ago I read that book, though. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe it was recently. I read that book. It's a very good book. Look, being occupied by a hostile government, it was bad. Remember, in the eyes of the British, and they weren't necessarily incorrect about this, it was a rebellion. And it was a rebellion, right? What's the difference between a rebellion and a revolution? A revolution's one you win. It was a rebellion. We were the rebels. And how do governments historically put down rebellious people? Historically, it's ugly. It's really, really ugly. It's really ugly. It's bad. So, yeah, that was better. All right. One more here real quick. I have a couple other things. Frank, Georgia, go.
Oh, yes, sir. I was going to let you know that I myself am your brother. I stepped on the yellow footprints in January of 2001.
And, how about that?
I want to sort of end on a lighter note. I want you to know I'm very much pro-life. I was going to mention that after hearing these last few calls about abortion and so forth. I went to MOS school at Naval Air Station Pensacola in 2001, and we had a bowling alley, and in that bowling alley was an A&W root beer place. And we most definitely enjoyed the frosty mugs of the A&W place, so forth. And while you were on the road to Baghdad in 2003, skipping forward a little bit in my time, I was on the USS Saipan in the Persian Gulf. So we were out there about the same time, sir.
Frank, let me ask you real quick. I know this is a stupid question, but Frank will understand it. Did the USS Saipan have air conditioning, Frank? Because I remember down in Kuwait, that was the hottest I'd ever been in my life.
Well, certain parts of the vessel did. I actually was an avionics marine, aviation electronics, and we had grunts, O311s, not unlike yourself, on there. There was air conditioning on parts of it there were not. Sometimes you were sweating, sometimes you were freezing.
At least you had some of it. You know, I think about that with some of those World War II ships. And towards the end, of course, there were ships where you could get cool air pumped into something towards the end. But I think about a lot of those missions that took place in tropical places, and it's essentially just a big heat box. What do you mean yellow footprint? You don't know what yellow footprints are? Chris, in boot camp, when you get off the bus, when you show up, and all the drill instructors are screaming at you, you have to go stand on yellow footprints. They have yellow footprints laid out in formation in front of you, and every Marine knows about the yellow footprints, and no Marine has fond memories of those. And I accidentally ran completely out of time. The show's over now, so I guess we're going to have to do this again tomorrow. Jesse at JesseKellyShow.com. That's all.